I would say this concept of retirement is in a state of flux. It's being really changed rapidly. And there's people like me, I'm 69. I struggled with retirement transition for the longest time. I tried to follow the old traditional path. And I was led to believe that, you know, it was all about money. And the more money you had, the better your retirement would be. And how complicated could retirement be? Because you don't have to work anymore. You can just enjoy a life of leisure. And because of that, those mistakes, I failed miserably at retirement. I ended up suffering from retirement shock for a long period of time. And I couldn't understand why that was happening to me. I found it very frustrating.
Welcome to the Future Ready Advisor Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Sivarajan, wealth management consultant and behavioral scientist. Join me and my guests, from industry experts to top advisors, as we explore the pain points that financial advisors face, how they can solve them, free up their time, and make their practice future ready. Hi, everyone. I'm Sam Sivarajan. Welcome to today's episode of the Future Ready Advisor. Today, I'm here with Simon Chan and Mike Drack, two financial service leaders and advocates for reframing how we think about and prepare for retirement. Simon, Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam. Lovely to be here.
Yes, I've been looking forward to this, Sam.
Great. I'm looking forward to it as well. So let me quickly introduce you to the audience. Simon is the founder of Adapt with Intent, a boutique consulting firm that works with leaders, educators, and organizations to radically redesign ways of working and learning across all stages of life. As longevity impacts how we work and learn, we see a new game of life emerging with new stages, greater need for personalization, and intentional evolution along the way. Simon has written and spoken extensively about the future of work, including as guest faculty at the Modern Elder Academy. Mike Drack is a retirement lifestyle designer and the author of two best-selling books, Victory Lap Retirement and the newly released Retirement Heaven and Hell. Along with being a public speaker on the topic of non-financial aspects of retirement, he also delivers workshops to help current and future retirees in creating their vision for their own retirement lifestyle design. It's a very topical conversation that we're going to be having, so I'm really looking forward to it. And so let's dive right in. Simon, why do you believe that the future of work and retirement needs to be reimagined?
So, Sam, maybe I'll start off with a bit of my personal journey into kind of looking at retirement. And it actually talks a little bit about how Mike and I met, because we're a bit of a hodgepodge or an interesting duo. So I grew up, my background is immigrant parents, and they brought me over here and said, you know, the goal of life is to work hard, get a good job, and retire. So me being kind of the high achiever trying to optimize, I tried to get to retirement as quickly as possible, which actually led me into the retirement financial services field, where I spent a lot of time kind of looking at retirement, financial planning, designing retirement products in both the group and retail space. But what I learned along the way was, you know, we spoke so much about the financial aspect of retirement in the industry that we didn't really spend a lot of time on the non-financial aspect. So when I got into my 40s, I was looking at kind of what I wanted to do, et cetera. I wasn't really ready to retire, even though I could have from a financial standpoint. But I really wanted to reprioritize and think about what mattered to me in life in terms of the ability to spend time with family, do things that are interesting to me. And it was always about, the narrative was always about deferring that in the traditional view of retirement. And that's a little bit about why I talk about kind of the new game of life. It's really at that point in time where I came across Mike's book. So this is about what, Mike, 7 years ago? I came across his book, Victory Lap Retirement, and it really gave me a different framing for how to think about retirement, that retirement wasn't necessarily needing to be full stop, and that maybe work or maybe something where you're keeping engaged is a different model. So that's the backdrop of kind of how Mike and I met. You're back to your question about why do I think the future of work and the future of retirement needs to be reimagined. is that there's a lot of different large societal trends that are impacting us. Everything from technology, the pace of change, the rise of individualism, hyper-personalization, but also increasing longevity, in other words, longer lives, as well as a shifting demographic. And this is really reshaping everything that we know when it comes to work and retirement. And what I find really interesting is technology, personalization, et cetera, those are all things that are relatively hard to predict. But longevity and longer lifespans and an aging population, that's going to happen for sure. And so what I'm starting to see, which we'll get into probably more in this conversation, is around the fact that the boomers are entering retirement in a very large manner, and they've impacted everything that they've touched up to this point. And retirement is no different. They're starting to relook at different ways of retiring. And because of longer lifespans, these individuals are starting to push the envelope around redefining what it might be, and that maybe it's not this period of just leisure and traveling and, you know, hanging out with the grandkids. Those are all very good things. But if you're going to be in midlife or be in retirement for an extended period of time, you need to think about how you're going to plan that, because that could be 10, 20, 30 years. And as that's happened in the retirement space, one of the things that messages that keeps coming up from retirees is, I want flexibility. I want to be able to design my life the way I want, which may include some work. And if you look at other generations like millennials, Gen Z, Gen X, that's what they're looking for from the workplace. So that's where I see a redefinition of how we live, how we work, and how we retire. All those things are coming into confluence, and we have an opportunity now to re-examine how we've designed our society, which was largely around a 60 to 70 year life, to really look at redesigning it for a life that probably is going to span 90 to 100 years.
Mike, what would you add?
I would say this concept of retirement is in a state of flux. It's being really changed rapidly. And there's people like me, I'm 69. I struggled with retirement transition for the longest time. I tried to follow the old traditional path. And I was led to believe that it was all about money. And the more money you had, the better your retirement would be, and how complicated could retirement be, because you don't have to work anymore. You can just enjoy a life of leisure. And because of that, those mistakes, I failed miserably at retirement. I ended up suffering from retirement shock for a long period of time. And I couldn't understand why that was happening to me. I found it very frustrating. And, you know, I was very frustrated because my wife couldn't understand why it was happening. My friends couldn't understand why it was happening. I couldn't understand why it was happening. And everyone automatically thought, Sam, that how could Mike be miserable because he doesn't have to work anymore? And the reason I was miserable was because I wasn't working anymore at the end of the day when I thought about it. So I spent a lot of time thinking about it and, you know, coming up to try to really focus on the psychology of retirement, what was making me feel that way. And it had, like I said, it had nothing to do with money. I had enough money to retire comfortably. It was all these other things, and that led to the writing of the books. But what I'm excited about these days is that I look at myself as the old version of retirement. I'm changing things. I'm not following the old path. I'm learning new things. But I get really excited when I see what Simon's doing. And, you know, he's taking a new approach. And I wish I could go back and do it, but I'm having so much fun watching him, saying, no, you don't have to follow this standard path, you know, work for 30 years and then retire for a period that could last just as long. There's different approaches he's taking. He's testing new things. He's talking to a lot of people. So now I'm very excited about it.
I just want to touch on that, because I think this is, you know, one of the things that I see is the power of, you know, multi-generations coming together. So we're living now, we talked about increasing longevity, declining birth rates is another big part of the shift in demographics. And so we're living in kind of the most age diverse society that we have ever been in. So it used to be where there was a lot of young people and very, very few old people. And now we're in a situation where it's really spread evenly across different ages. And so workplaces are becoming more multi-generational, society is becoming more multi-generational. And I think one of the gifts that I got in meeting Mike was a different generational perspective, because when him and I first met and we started talking about retirement, And, you know, the first time we met, him and I read his book, Victory Lap Retirement. I thought it was so compelling. I just emailed him, right? To be honest with you, I didn't even know if he was, I didn't realize you were Canadian, Mike. But, you know, I emailed him and said, hey, like, I loved your book. Really impacted me because I had not, being in the retirement industry for so long, looking at the financial aspects, I really never had deeply considered the psychology around it and the importance of that. And so when I emailed him, he was like, oh, I actually live in Toronto. I personally live in Kitchener-Waterloo, which is about an hour outside of Toronto. And we decided to get together for lunch. And one of the things that we did when we got together for lunch is we probably talked for 3 hours about just the differing perspectives on retirement. Mike is, you know, you're, I think, in your 60s, very early 60s at the time. I was in my kind of early 40s. That 20-year generational difference, there was an interesting discussion about, like, well, how do you view retirement and breaking down some of those barriers? And I think oftentimes we don't have the opportunity to talk to other people at the same stage, even though we're 20 years apart, we were somewhat at the same stage. And so to Mike's point about, you know, people being embarrassed about the fact that retirement, people are struggling in retirement, that's why a lot of people don't talk about it, because from a societal perspective, it's not normative to say, hey, I'm struggling in retirement, because your friends, your family, your spouses, whatever, if they're not retired, they're like, what's wrong with you? You should be, this should be the happiest time of your life. So that I think the generational perspective is a really interesting one when we explore this topic.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think we're at a stage where this is a topic that is now being discussed historically or traditionally in our society. I think you guys all put it right, that you worked the hours, you got your gold watch, and you sailed off into the sunset, and everybody should be happy. And we've talked about purpose at work, and I think that's a very relevant conversation for Gen X, Gen Z, the millennials, et cetera. But I think Mike has touched a little bit, and you, Simon, has touched upon it, that there has to be purpose in retirement as well, right? Like, what are we going to do? And it's only now becoming a topic of a conversation. And I like the comment that you made about this multi-generational workforce. I suspect that is going to be an increasingly important trend going forward, particularly given the labor shortages that we're having. We're having people that are older that actually want to continue to be working in some way, shape, or form, perhaps not on the same terms as they did before. And I think companies are going to need to keep that talent, keep that experience and available. But there's a new paradigm or a new model that we need to figure out. And that's where these types of conversations, I think, are helpful. I want to dive into something that I think that you both touched on, and I'd like to explore a little bit more. Maybe I'd start with you, Mike. Most of us work 40 plus hours a week for 30 plus years in the traditional type of model. Work accounts for more than 50% of most of our waking hours. So it is our intellectual stimulation. It is our source of social network. And it is a huge factor, as I just mentioned, in our sense of purpose. And the reality is that for all of us coming from the financial services world, the reality is that most of us plan our working lives. Some of us plan our financial lives, but almost no one is planning their retirement lives. What do you think? Is that a fair assessment? And what do you think needs to change?
Well, I totally agree with what you're asking here. And that was my biggest mistake. And that's what caused my retirement shock. It was these non-financial things that I didn't consider or understand or, you know, put things in place that would mitigate the problems they caused for me. Because yes, work was my main source of purpose, other than raising my kids and taking care of my family. But at some point when they left home, they went their own way. Well, I was left with my work, and that was the thing that got me out of bed every morning, gave me purpose. And then when I retired, I never had anything to retire to, anything tangible. And I needed a new source of purpose, or I was going to be in trouble. And I was in trouble because I didn't have that. And so I struggled with that. And then there's so many other benefits attached to my purpose, my work before, because you know, I had work friends. So that was a big part. It was almost like having a second family when I went to work, and I spent a lot of time with them every day. And I lost those when I retired. And there are other benefits too of you know, work made me, you know, it gave me a chance to be creative, and it gave me a chance to help other people through the work I did. And that was all taken away. And work gave me a chance to keep growing, a chance to keep learning new things and keep my mind sharp. So when I retired, I was at the top of my game. I was firing on all cylinders. But within probably about 6 months, you just kind of, everything kind of slows down, and you start getting slower, and you're not as sharp as you were, and you don't have the energy you used to have, because you don't have this new purpose that will drive you again. And until you find that, yeah, you know, people are going to suffer. Now, it won't impact everyone, because really there are different types of retirees. So you might have comfort oriented. Those are the people that love to retire. You know, that's probably their biggest goal in life. And once they reach that thing, they just want to sit back and take it easy. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the other people that are growth oriented or givers, those are the ones that are going to struggle unless they find a new way of satisfying those needs of theirs.
Yeah, I would like, yeah, I want to touch a little bit on kind of the societal norms and expectations right around retirement. So we've talked a little bit about this, but there's a lot of societal norms around you get to retirement. That's what you're doing. And you working in retirement is almost like a four-letter word, right? Like Mike and I have done workshops. I've done workshops as well through with organizations and groups of people. And when you mention working, there's always one person that puts their hand up and says, well, hey, the whole point of retiring is to not work. And that is ingrained in our brains. So when Mike is talking about getting people to realize that they need a sense of purpose and meaning in retirement, it is really challenging to get people to think about that prior to retirement. My experience, and I think, Mike, you would echo the same thing, is that most of the people who get to this point where they realize that they need to figure out how to replace their reason to get up in the morning, the fact that they may not have as many friends as they think, is when they're actually in retirement. And so the opportunity is, how do you get people to plan for this prior to getting there? Because all of a sudden making new friends and creating, you know, exploring sources of meaning, you can't just do that. You don't just wake up one morning and figure that out, right? And so that's an exploration process. And I would argue right now that there's no structures in place for this period of life. When you think about my son, who's, you know, 18 years old and going in first year university, there's a lot of structures in place for people of that age to explore what's next. You've got universities and colleges, you've got career counselors, you've got parents who talk to them about, you know, what to think about, what to consider, to explore different things, try different clubs. And there's societal infrastructures to convene those people because they're all at the same stage. If you think about where we are when it comes to people in retirement, where are the structures to help people explore what's next? They don't exist. And so people like Mike, who are do-it-yourselfer, who have the initiative and are proactive, will go and figure it out. He'll go explore. And yes, he had his bumps and bruises, but he got back up and did it. How many people float through retirement, not because they're bad and not because they don't have better things that they could do? It's just that the societal norm is that when you get there, you retire. And if you ask most people what they do or what they want to do in retirement, it's the usuals. It's, I'm going to golf, I'm going to travel, I'm going to see my grandkids. And again, none of those things are bad, but if you're going to live 20 to 30 years in retirement and you're spending 2,000 to 2,500 hours a week in retirement, that's a lot of hours to fill in golf. And when you get people to actually break down what they're going to do in retirement and actually get them to put pen to paper and plan it out, that's when they have the aha moments to realize, I really haven't thought about this in a meaningful way. And it's a very, just right now, an abstract concept. So I'm really pro, how do we create more structures to help people en masse, so it's scalable, explore what's next, and do it with other people at the same stage? Because I think that's what's going to really turn the tide on this new retirement.
I love both of your comments. I think it's the norms that we've grown up with in society and these almost sort of expectations. I think I'm dealing with a lot of people planning for retirement, the financial aspect of it. I'm always struck with this idea, exactly what you said, Simon, I'm going to be golfing. And sure, you might love golfing, but and when you can't do it because you've got a full-time job and you're lucky if you get out once a week, it's one thing to say that you're going to do it all the time. 6 months of doing five rounds a week, you might feel differently. And I think what people forget is that just even on the financial aspects of it, when they're planning retirement, I always joke that there's three stages of retirement, right? So there's the go-go years, there's the slow-go years, and then there's the no-go years. And each of those different phases of retirement actually requires a different set of financial budgeting and planning because you're spending your time differently. But along those lines, I think we're not actually thinking about what exactly are those activities in those times. And I think that I've seen experts that are saying, having people go through and say, okay, map out a calendar on a week of what your week looks like in retirement. And they become, you can slot your golf in, you can slot your travel in, you can maybe slot your seeing your grandkids, etc. But there's big chunks of time that they can't account for.
If I could just jump in, Sam, I've been thinking a lot about this. As a matter of fact, your go-go years. I was thinking about this because recently, like this year, my wife suffered from sciatica for about 4 months. I went, my God, you know, if you lose your health, you can't do all these things that you love to do. And that's why it's so important to front end load your retirement and do all those things that you've always wanted to do. Maybe make that trip to Italy or, you know, start a new business or whatnot, because this is your chance. But at some point, you're going to lose that chance and you want to take advantage of it. And that is why, too, you know, the heaviest spending is at the front end, because you're catching up and doing things. And you don't want to waste prime retirement time because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So that's one bit of advice I give to people is, yeah, you got to understand how retirement works and how spending works, and not to waste these time and opportunities that you have, right?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. If I can pick up one thing that we've talked about is this multi-generational and the fact that that there may be labor shortages. I heard a researcher say, and I love this turn of phrase, that we treat retirement as a cliff instead of as an off-ramp. That really resonated with me. I'd love to hear your takes on this, like particularly given, as I said, the tight labor markets. How do employers and employees create off-ramp scenarios? And maybe I expand on that a little bit. We talk about society and what's ingrained. I think that we generally, there is a presumption among employers that they can't talk to employees about a different form of working because that's not done. I think there's a presumption among employees that I can't talk to my employer about a different way of doing things that might 3 days a week or whatever, because that's not done. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'll jump in to start. I mean, again, this goes back to how society has been traditionally set up, right? And I say has been because this notion of retirement, maybe just a quick tangent, this notion of retirement is a relatively new thing in human history, right? Like, the first era of retirement, there really, up until the 20th century, there was no such thing as retirement. That didn't exist. People just worked until they couldn't. And then, you know, in the 30s, we had Social Security, OAS, CPP kind of creeping in the 30s, all the way into 1965 when CPP was established. That's when the concept of retirement really emerged. So it's not that long of a construct. When we got into the 60s and 70s, people started living longer, retirement ages came down, and then you had this kind of golden years concept. And now I think we're in this next evolution of whatever the fourth version is of retirement. So to your question about kind of labor shortage and full stop or the cliff, I think that's just how society has been built in the last, call it 75 years, where it is a three-stage life, very linear. You go to school, you work, and you full stop retire, full stop retire. And most people did it at the same, relatively the same time and the same age. Why is that? Well, because you had defined benefit plans, so guaranteed pension plan, workplace plans that had a prescriptive retirement date at 65. And retirement was a created construct because you had all back again, back when we had a age pyramid where we had a lot of young people and very few old people, it was a way to get people who were older out of the workforce so we could make room for the younger. Fast forward to today, when we have a very age diverse society where we have equal number of people across all bands, as I said before, that's a very different proposition. So we are the oldest working population ever in Canada. That's going to increase. 1 in 5 Canadians are over the age of 55 in the workforce. And so with this aging demographic that's coming through, and we're going to become what they call a super age country, which is, I think it's over 25% of the working population is over 65 by 2030. So this aging population is a thing. It's not going to go away. And yes, Canada has had immigration to help out with the labor force, but that's not going to be enough to be able to really ensure that our economy, our workplace, et cetera, keeps up with the fact that the fastest growing population is those who are over 55, 65. And Mike made the point himself, when he quote unquote retired at 60, he was still top of his game. He's written books since, he's done so many amazing things since. And so because we've moved from a society based on heavy labor, et cetera, to a knowledge-based society, we can have people working into their 70s and 80s, et cetera, and that's very viable. So back to societal construct, our systems, workplace systems, societal infrastructure have all been built for that 65 to 70 years, and we haven't modernized that. So to address this labor shortage, I think it's really about looking at different labor pools like people who are the older population, because they're the ones that are growing. Now, what's important, I think, is this idea of a win-win. Because if you go to, again, if you go to someone who's 62 years old and they haven't really felt the pain of retirement and say, hey, Mike, why don't you not retire and work? They're going to be like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm going to be retiring. So you really need to help them understand that this idea of quote unquote working in retirement is actually good for them as well. Good for their cognitive health, good for staying connected, good for having purpose and meaning. But in order to be able to make this win-win work, you have to redesign the system. And probably the biggest thing that needs to be redesigned is flexibility. And when you want to think about flexibility, because not people aren't going to want to work 40 to 50 hours like they do today, et cetera. They're going to want to work on their old terms. Those design elements, actually, that flexibility will be helpful for those who are millennial, Gen Z, Gen X. Everybody's asking for it. So I think we're at the early stages of a workforce revolution that employers will be forced into it because of this labor shortage. And the only growing workforce is the older population.
Before I ask Mike to weigh in, I think that that's a great comment, but it strikes me that these types of conversations need to be occurring well before the worker is 62, you know, to start getting them. And maybe these are, and we'll touch on this later, but maybe these are actual services that employers can be providing to have these kind of discussions in a safe forum for their employees to sit there and say, how should you be thinking? You may be in your 40s. Retirement is a long, long way away. But if we're going to think about this for the individual's benefit, the company's benefit, and society's benefit as an off-ramp versus a cliff, we need to start laying the groundwork. We need to start having those conversations. You, the employee, need to start thinking about what your purpose, what this next stage of your life might look like, and how we design or move ourselves in that direction together.
I want to jump in with an example, and then Mike, I want to love to hear your comments. So an example is I had a conversation with a construction union trustee at a big pension conference, and he talked about, after hearing a little bit around longevity, et cetera, he started to talk about how in construction, their issue when it comes to labor shortage isn't people who are older. It's getting people who, people who are younger. They can get lots of young people into the construction trade. Where they struggle is when they get onto the site, they need the wisdom of people who have been on the site for a while to help them navigate. And what he finds is that most of the people who retire from construction, their bodies are very, very tired, obviously. And so they want to retire and they want to take a year off to let their body rest. Now, what happens is, because they haven't had a conversation with these people beforehand, all these retirees leave and they lose touch with them, right? But when he reconnects with some of these people 2 to 3 years later, in some cases, just kind of as friends or whatever, the comment is that boy, like if I could find a way to be a site supervisor or a site subject matter expert where I'm using my knowledge and my wisdom on the site to help the younger construction workers 10 to 12 hours a week, I'd totally be into that because that would help my purpose and meaning and my connections and I can give back. But to your point, those conversations haven't happened up until retirement day. And these people have now retired and they're kind of off in the ether and the employer no longer has any contact with them. So again, this is a system issue where we need to build new systems and pathways and norms so that these conversations happen and that there's programs that are accessible to a wide audience versus the one or two people who kind of like negotiate this arrangement.
Great example. Mike, what do you say?
Well, I just want to add to first to Simon's comment about the tradesman and the body being worn out. And what I've noticed is if you go to Home Depot, you'll see a lot of experienced older workers there that were former electricians and plumbers, and they're there just to give advice and to help people pick out the product that they need to do whatever home renovation they're looking for. So you can see that skill being transferred and they're turning into mentors for people like me that don't have a clue how to fix their homes. So that gets me excited. But what I'm really concerned is stress, the stress on people that are trying to work for, say, 30 plus years and save up enough money to fund a retirement that could last just as long. In my mind, the numbers don't work anymore. And that's why there's this need for continuation of work, some different form of work. And yes, I love less hours, but we can't afford to stop. We have to keep going. We have to keep making some money because longevity risk is real. It's going to hit us right in the face. We don't know how long we're going to live. And to live a long life costs a lot of money. And so I like to sleep at night, and so do a lot of other people. So we need to have to rethink this thing. And employers that can see it and see the important role they play, well, that's when we have to start these conversations. And I think a lot of employees are scared to talk to their employers and say, you know what, I don't want to work full-time anymore. I'm burned out, but I would love to work part-time. Can we talk about that? And to have more of those conversations. And Sam, you said, it's a win-win for everyone. But things have to change.
Yeah, I want to double click on that point that Mike just said about working 30 years or working 35 years to fund a 35-year retirement. Like that equation, I agree, doesn't work anymore. And I think now, one of the big changes that happened in that kind of third version, the golden years version of retirement to where it is today, is that less than a quarter of people in Canada have a defined benefit or a guaranteed pension plan, right? So it's not the same as it was before where people got to, 65 years old and they could retire and that they had a guaranteed form of income that was going to last the rest of their life and that the risk was no longer on them. It was on their employer, right? And today, most people get a lump sum, right? And they have to figure out how to live off that. If you're a financial advisor, what life expectancy you put in, right? You're starting to see people put in 90, 94, 95. It's not an 80-year life expectancy anymore, which is fantastic. But it's only going to be fantastic if we have our health and we're able to fund it. And so Mike is right. I think there's, some broader societal policy things that we need to think about with this increasing longevity. But in the near term, I think people do need to take some of their own, need to take things into their own hands and find ways to generate some income because it's going to be helpful in terms of that sources of meaning and connections piece of it. But also it just makes good financial sense.
No, I think that's a great point. There's always been this financial stress element, particularly as we're segueing from a defined benefit to a defined contribution plan, and add in longevity, add in market volatility. And I think it's a perfect storm for people planning for their retirements. I think to your point, I firmly believe that's still, call it quote unquote, a retirement crisis, but it's one that we are sort of talking about. It's in the press, it's sort of in the public sphere. I think the second retirement crisis that we've also touched on, which I think is only now starting to catch people's attention. And some people like you and Mike, the two of you are in the forefront, is that sense of purpose, is what do you do with that time that you're having? I'd love to explore, because the audience for this podcast is obviously financial advisors and financial services leaders. What role do you think financial advisors and the wealth management industry need to play in this area, particularly the second retirement crisis, but also the first one? What should they be doing to help their clients think through these issues and plan and prepare for their golden years, both on the financial, but as Mike says, also the non-financial elements and aspects of it?
I'll jump in first, I guess. My wife's an investment advisor, so we talk about this all the time. And I think, you know, where does a person go? Where does a near retiree go for advice and direction? And I think the best place to go to is to your investment advisor. And the expectation is that they will educate and create awareness of what could happen and what you need to plan for. And I'm not talking about the money side. I'm talking about the non-monetary challenges that people will be facing. So yes, let's talk about purpose. Let's talk about maybe longevity drivers, the things that you need to do to enjoy a long, happy life. And let's get into that. But yeah, I also understand that advisors are busy. You know, they have to deal with you know, a big business book and a changing financial area and the challenges with that. So, you know, at minimum, they could give, say, books and say, here, read these things. And, you know, hopefully the advisor's up to speed on that so they can start these conversations and have these conversations a couple of years before a person actually jumps into retirement to say, hey, have you thought about this? What are you doing about that? Do you have new purpose? Do you plan on working part-time? Just having these conversations. Now, some people would need more help. And, you know, that's where you can bring in a specialist, like a retirement coach or someone that would specialize in that, or even refer them to some of these new transition courses that are being developed. And Simon, maybe this is something you could speak to, but I love these new courses that are geared towards helping these people transition to a successful retirement and find new purpose. I think they're so important. I'm very excited about it because I can see a big need for them. And I only could wish they were there when I retired, because it would have saved me from a lot of aggravation.
Yeah, so I'll touch on the retirement program or transition programs in a sec, but I'll go back to Sam's first part around the financial piece of it. So having spent, you know, 20 years in the financial services industry, what I see are on the financial side, a couple of things that the industry could be thinking about is, number one, looking at our retirement calculators. If you look at most retirement calculators on websites of banks, insurance companies, et cetera, It looks a lot like, you know, the third era of retirement, where it's like, you know, it's a full stop retirement, right? So what do you do when you go on a retirement calculator? What's your age, you know, rate of return, et cetera, but it's like one hard stop. It's like, I'm going to retire at 60, right? And so that is a first step in how do we modernize how we look at retirement. It starts with tools, right? It starts with the tools that we have. Now, financial advisors obviously have more sophisticated retirement planning software. But again, I always find it interesting to think about, how do you actually plan how much you need in retirement if you don't really know what you're going to do? So if an advisor isn't having a conversation with their client about this notion of designing your lifestyle in a more fluid way, right? I get that, you know, some advisors may even go to the degree of saying, like, you know, how many trips do you want to plan, et cetera. But I think there needs to be a more detailed planning process around what are you going to actually do in retirement. You talked about the go-go years, the no-go years, the slow-go years, like those, that type of planning in a more fluid, in a more diverse and personalized way around what you're going to do in retirement directly impacts the budget you need, the cash flow you need, et cetera. And I think that is the role of the advisor. To Mike's point around the non-financial aspects, I believe that some advisors, I've seen some advisors, you know, more in the US, but I've seen some advisors really take that role of being both that kind of like lifestyle designer, retirement coach, and advisor. I think that that's awesome. To realistically think that most advisors are going to take that route, given their expertise, their orientation, et cetera, I don't think that that's necessarily going to happen in mass. So I think that there needs to be other complementary options. So one of which Mike mentioned are retirement coaches. So I think you're going to see that as a growing field. Both Mike and I are connected to the Retirement Coaches Association, which is out of the U.S., run by a fellow by the name of Bob Laura. He's starting to try to create almost accreditation for retirement coaching. So again, seedlings, right? Seedlings of an industry that is growing. Another seedling is the university and college sector, something that I'm involved in. Again, mainly in the US, but some growing in Canada and some programs that are being built in Canada. These are programs that the category is called a midlife transition program. And the idea is people who are at midlife or retired, they go back to school, right? And they're not going back to school necessarily to take just courses like upskilling on web design, et cetera. They're actually going through an experience with other people at the same stage who are trying to explore what's next. The three most prominent programs out there are Stanford's Distinguished Careers Institute, Harvard's Advanced Leadership Initiative, and Notre Dame's Inspired Leadership Initiative. All three of those kind of hallmark universities bring back 25, 50 accomplished individuals to go back to quote unquote school, and they take some classes, they explore what their new sense of purpose and meaning is, and they literally use the university and college as a playground to explore what's next. And if you think about, again, my son who's 18, who's in first year university, he's kind of doing the same thing, right? And so I think this is a real opportunity, not just for the elite schools, but for colleges and universities and higher ed of all sizes to be able to start developing these programs. And I could see how a financial advisor in the future might say, look, I'm going to have some initial discussions with you around lifestyle by design, but maybe it's good for you to go to a program at X college or university to go through that and bring me back what you're designing. What do you want to do with your life? And let me help you cost that out so you can fund it. I think that's a really viable model and maybe an aspirational model for what we do in the future. And the last thing I'll kind of throw out there, which I get really excited about, you know, where the future could be, is that in the US, there's a stat that, you know, retirees spend, you know, 40 to 50 hours a week watching television or Netflix, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what you want to do. But imagine if we could carve off 10, 20, 30, 40% of those people's time, because we're going to change the societal norm for those people to give back, whether it be mentoring, whether it be social causes. They just want to feel useful, help them be useful and feel useful in society. Imagine the impact we could make. And I think that's the real power of rethinking how we look at this period of midlife and retirement and putting those structures in place.
Look, I totally agree. And I think that to your point, it's an evolving area. To both your points, it's an evolving area. And I think that it's probably too far a stretch to expect that to realistically expect that financial advisors are going to become full experts in this evolving field and run a book of business. And to Mike's point, I think that there's plenty to do and enough changes that are occurring in the financial services industry itself to keep advisors busy. I think it's less having the answers, but more for the advisors to ask the questions. And some of those questions are deep, and some of those are questions that I don't think the client has an answer to. And perhaps it's not important that they either have the answer at hand or that the advisor helps them find it. But I think an advisor can play a really critical role to ask those questions that make the client think. So questions like, what exactly is your week going to look like in retirement? What are you going to do? What are your aspirations? And I think to Mike's earlier point, maybe most near retirees think about the go-go years. That's what they've planned out. They're thinking, okay, I'm going on this cruise. I'm going on this round-the-world trip. That's great. What happens when you get sick of traveling and that you want to spend more time with your grandkids, etc.? What are you going to do? What are the hobbies that you're going to be spending time? Who are the people you're going to be spending time with? And these things don't necessarily need an answer, but I think you also said this earlier, Simon, like you don't stop it's 65, it's the day after your retirement, and you don't suddenly say, oh, I guess I got to go find a hobby. It doesn't work that way. So it's these are things that probably are worth thinking about in your 40s and 50s. And I think that may be a very important role that an advisor can play, just to start putting or planting those seeds in their clients' heads.
Yeah, I think also when we talk about this, like, this is also a offensive and defensive strategy, right? If you think about where the financial advice industry is going, the portfolio management, some of the things that traditionally advisors could hang their hat on are very much becoming commoditized through things like robo-advisors, et cetera. And so the things that robo-advisors, AI, et cetera, can't do are the human things around asking those questions that Sam talked about, right? And making those human connections. And when you want to think about differentiated services, particularly at the high end of the market and high net worth, these are the things that I suspect that they're craving. And, you know, if you want some inspiration, a friend of mine that has a practice out in Santa Barbara, California, it's called Mission Wealth. It's one of the larger financial planning firms in the country, run by my friend Seth Streeter. Have a look at one of his TED Talks around this. He's built a practice, an enormous practice, around obviously high-end, very sophisticated financial planning, but also this notion of purpose and meaning. And he actually runs workshops. He helps to coach some clients, but he creates an experience, a holistic experience, around being that trusted advisor that Sam talked about. And the trusted advisor is well beyond just the, you know, portfolio management, risk management side that we traditionally think about from a financial planning perspective.
Gentlemen, this has been a lot of fun. We're coming to the end of our podcast, so I have a few final rapid fire style of questions for the both of you. It's something that I ask all my guests. So maybe we start with Mike. Number one, Mike, professionally, what is the most important lesson you've learned over the years?
For myself, not to stop. I have a good handle on what my needs are, when I need to be happy. And, you know, I have to keep working, but I have to work at things that I love to do, and I love helping people and giving back. So when we talk about retirement lifestyle design, it took me a while, but I've designed a lifestyle that can deliver that to me. And now retirement's never been better. But yeah, I had a rough ride at the beginning.
Great.
Yeah. For me, I would say that think about the value of weak ties. And what I mean by weak ties is people in your network that don't know who you are. And spending time with them. Oftentimes when we talk about, you know, building your network, you talk about, you know, talking to people that you know, et cetera. But what I've found for myself in my career, when I wanted to make a transformation or a shift from the path that I'm on, I try to spend as much time and meet new people that aren't in my circle. They may not be in financial services. They may not be of my age, et cetera, but I look for people who are very different from me because they can give a very different perspective. And they also have no grounding in who you are. They can give you objective views on what might be possible. And I put Mike in that category. Mike was a weak tie 7 years ago that I met that we shared in common that this stage and interest in retirement. But because he brought a very different perspective to how I viewed my life and how I viewed things, my life went on a very different trajectory. And, you know, I credit Mike in terms of doing that, but he was a weak tie who now has become a strong tie.
That's great. So number two, and again, I'll direct it to Mike first. What is one practical tip you would offer listeners that are keen on applying your insights?
What I suggest they do is go download our free book that we just released last September. It's called Longevity Lifestyle by Design. They can just go visit boomingencore.com and download it. And it was a passion of love writing this book. And I talked Simon into contributing a chapter to it as well, as well as some of my other five friends. So I really wanted to teach people about retirement shock, what causes it, how you can avoid it. I wanted to teach people about retirement lifestyle design. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to give it to the financial services industry and say, here, read this book, understand the challenges that your clients are going to be facing. Make sure your clients read this book. So after that, you can both have these conversations about it and get into the details and make sure all the different risks are covered off, both financially and non-financially. So I want to start the conversation, make sure people's eyes are open to what they're going to be facing in retirement and be better prepared for it. So it's a win-win for everyone.
That's great. Simon?
My practical tip kind of comes in the form of three questions. So I think we've talked a bit about this kind of new game of life that's emerging. So I'd encourage people who are, you know, any stage, but midlife or retirement, to ask themselves three questions. First one is, whose rules are you playing by? So are these your parents' rules for retirement or the next chapter? Are these your friends, society, whatever? The second question is, why are you following these rules, right? What's the rationale for following these rules? And the third one is, if you decided to ignore these rules and redefine the game of life for yourself, what would that look like? And I think if you ask those three questions, it might be pretty enlightening in terms of what the outcomes might be in terms of looking at designing what your next chapter might be.
Those are great. And I think if it's done right, I suspect that people asking those questions are not going to have the answers. And I think it's okay to sit with that discomfort for a while and let your subconscious work through it. But I think too often, we try to rush away from the really deep questions. And I think these are probably ones that are going to shed a lot of light and direction for people that in a critical juncture in their life. So, Simon, Mike, this has been great. I think it's a conversation that I've really enjoyed having. I think it's a conversation that I think our listeners are going to enjoy and take lots away from, because I think it's an important topic that I think is only going to increase on people's radars in the coming weeks, months, and years. If listeners want to learn more about you or find out about your work, where do they go? I know Mike mentioned the book. That's great. But maybe get him to re-mention it and anything else, any other forums that they might look to?
Well, personally, myself, people can just connect with me on LinkedIn, or I would suggest to download the book, Longevity Lifestyle by Design. They can download it at boomingencore.com. And, you know, they'll learn a lot about retirement transition and, like I said, the risk involved and things like that. And if they want to get contact me directly with any questions, I'm more than happy to help. And one thing I'm going to be doing is going forward is, my life has changed. You know, we keep changing into these new people, and I'm going to spend a lot more time giving back. And I'm offering to do free retirement seminars based on the subject matter to nonprofit groups and things like that, that people that could use, and even companies too, just to help people prepare better for a successful retirement.
That's awesome. Simon?
And if you're looking to learn more about what we do at Adapt With Intent, you can visit the website at www.adaptwithintent.com. Most of the work that we're doing are really around trying to work with the leaders and executive leaders and put this topic on the strategic priority, all right, to have this, to create those systems that we've been talking about. So certainly you can check out the website, and also similar to Mike, reach out to me on LinkedIn. Would love to chat and hear more about your perspectives and how we can actually work together to really reshape the financial services industries and some of the other industries we need to support the shift to 100-year life.
Awesome. Gentlemen, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sam.
In today's episode of the Future Ready Advisor, Simon Chan and Mike Drack, financial service leaders, delve into redefining retirement in the modern age. We talked about the shift from the traditional view of retirement centered solely on finances to a more holistic approach encompassing the psychological and societal aspects. My key takeaways are, number one, retirement redefinition. The concept of retirement is evolving rapidly. Longevity, technological advancements, and shifting demographics are reshaping retirement. The focus extends beyond financial stability to encompass a purposeful, engaged life after leaving the workforce. I agree that we need to redefine retirement and change the way we think and talk about it. Certainly, we need to do a better job of planning for it in a more holistic way. Number two, non-financial considerations. Both Simon and Mike highlighted the overlooked aspects of retirement, emphasizing the need for planning the non-financial elements. The psychological, social, and purpose-driven aspects play a pivotal role in a fulfilling retirement. Financial advisors play a critical role not just in managing finances, but also in guiding retirees towards purposeful living. Incorporating lifestyle design, fluid planning, and engaging in transition programs can significantly enhance retirement experiences. Number three, workforce revolution. We discussed the need for employers to adapt to an aging population and labor shortage. Creating win-win scenarios through flexibility and redesigning systems is pivotal for both employees and employers. Retirement should be an off-ramp, not a cliff, for both employer and employee. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Future Ready Advisor. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast. And if you could rate it while you're at it, I would appreciate it. Visit samsivarajan.com where you can download a behavioral coaching guide and find other resources. Join me in the next episode for more tips and tools to make your practice future ready.